Welcome to the second preseason Supercoach podcast for season 2021. Second podcast, second platform for video recording, all sorts of craziness. It's only been overnight that we're recording this second episode. I haven't even edited the first one, Mark, and we're back in it because we're so keen. And our recording platform overnight released video recording. So we're trying something new. So hopefully the video goes out with either the last one or this one. Still unknown at this stage. But anyway, that's probably unnecessary preamble for everyone. Welcome, FB Donkey. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, mate. Good to hang out with you 2 days in a row. I'm a lucky guy.
Yep, the last day of lockdown in Melbourne. So fortunate to get a bit of time while we're trapped indoors in Victoria. I'm in Sydney, if you did not catch the first show, flying back home tomorrow. Anyway, we'll get on to what we're going to talk about for this episode, which is the back line. So heading through the positional shows as we do in the preseason is a pretty well-established tradition now. We're not going to change a good working formula. Last episode, Mark, we talked about the top picked defenders. So we covered Lloyd, Williams, and Laird. And then we just mentioned Lockie Whitfield. And that was where we left it. So we're going to run through some of the other options. But I think it probably makes sense still to continue looking at the ownership stats and move our way down that way. And then we can do a bit of a summary at the end of the show. Just a kind reminder before we jump into the show, we will be recording a Patreon bonus episode after this show. So if you want some bonus content and to support the show, please jump on board patreon.com/supercoach. We have a prize that goes out to the top overall scorer in our group for the year. Each year, so make sure you get involved with that. Of course, bonus content. We've got a private Discord channel. A few little bonuses. If you have a high enough subscription, you get a cap and a stubby holder as well as a bit of a physical thank you. Plenty of different options starting from $1 a week. So if you're new to the show, welcome, and that's how you can support us. Otherwise, to get involved in the community, supercoachcoach.com.au or join us on Facebook and on Twitter. We're on the social media channels as well. So enough of a preamble, Mark. Let's get into some Supercoach chats. And maybe we'll just start on Lockie Whitfield. 561,000. Upside's definitely there, but with the liver injury, what would you need to see before you pick him? If he plays in that preseason, the only preseason game that we get, is that enough to potentially squeeze his way into your side with a good showing?
Probably not, I think. A bruised liver is a pretty tricky injury for playing AFL footy, I think. He is not running at the moment and is unlikely to play any preseason games. So I think that most sides will end up with Whitfield in their team by the end of the year if he can stay fit. His scoring potential is just so high. He has those big 150-plus games, really consistent, an absolute gun of the competition. I think he's the sort of player that doesn't need a crazy good preseason to be a good pick. He's just so naturally fit and can just run out the game. So I think he can build into the season, but it's enough. A liver injury is not great, and it's enough of a sign to probably just look elsewhere for your starting side.
All right, next player in 16.8% of teams is Wayne Miller. 312,000. Talk is he's going to get some time in the middle. Now, I heard the AFL Supercoach official podcast that our Tim and Dan do, and talked about Wayne a little bit, and reflective in the percentage pick stats here. They've gone to positional shows as well, Mark. Went through the defenders too. What do you reckon about
what do they
Wayne?
Say? Well, yeah, what do they say? Mimicry is a form of flattery. We'll take that. Wayne Miller is, look, I mean, if it wasn't for injuries, he looked like he was probably going to break out maybe 2019, but he has had a lot of injuries over his time in the AFL, and the most games he's ever played in a season is 19 over 5 seasons. So that's not a great sign. You do get a really healthy discount, and he did start the year off with 96 and 70 last year. I think it probably depends a lot on rookie availability. So at the moment, defense rookies look fairly slim. And if they are really slim, then you might end up having to go into a mid-pricer. I think he's definitely got the potential to be a 90 average defender, which for 300,000 you would take and would turn out to be a good pick. He's probably the sort of player that could post a 120 plus early and everyone FOMOs into him as a selection. And so he could give you a bit of a head start. He's a decent chance of making my side at this stage. I'm not convinced on the selection. It's a shame we don't have some preseason games to really get to see what role he's playing and what sort of form he's in. But yeah, he's high in consideration for my team. What about you?
312,000 is just a bit much to pay for a mid-pricer. You want to be pretty sure that they're going to work out, because if they don't, it's a fair bit more that you've invested. And those sort of picks can really peter out. If he averages 85 from that sort of price point, you're not as happy with them as being a step ladder selection compared to somebody who's more at a 250K bracket. I know we touched on in the Patreon show some of the forwards that were cheap, so Z-ball types. So the profile is just generally one that, like, to your point, Mark, you generally want to see a pretty strong run into the season to be able to pick them with confidence. At this stage of the season, I think that sort of pick tends to make a lot of sides early in the preseason, and then they tend to filter out. Without a really good showing in the first preseason game, I doubt he'll be selected in this percent of teams. There are chances that he plays well, but still is unable to score 100 in the midfield for Adelaide. That could very much be a legitimate consideration. At this stage, unless I see something amazing in preseason game, he's probably not hugely likely to make my team. I do have a question for you, Mark, though, about rookies.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, what sort of players do work out in that 300,000 range? So over 300,000, have you had success with mid-prices in the past, and what sort of profile would they have?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think we generally really like finding the guys returning from injury or have moved clubs and are getting more opportunities in a different spot. 300K, picking a more genuine breakout within the same team is just generally a higher risk type player. Most mid-prices conform to that sort of pattern, and that's why they're generally a little bit more dangerous, I think. There has been contention for half-back and wing spots in Adelaide, and consistency in playing those positions over time has been challenging, and we've seen that with Brody Smith and Rory Laird as recent examples. And so at 312K, I think you want to hold them for the season, ideally. If you did have to move them on and you got to trade them out at a peak, that may be still palatable. But I do think that sort of price point you generally want to keep. Whereas under 300K, you're more happy to use them as a step ladder selection. Potentially that changes a little bit with the back line for the first time last year, really seeing a large increase in scoring with the change of play and the running and gunning from outback. So maybe even if Wayne manages a high average, you might still want to top him up, meaning that there's a higher bar to clear in the back line as well, where previously you might be happy with Wayne averaging 95. This year, you'd probably be looking at a score that's now a fair bit high. Jeremy Howe last year obviously scored huge. How much of that was because of a change in game style toward the back line versus that being influenced by 16 minutes of game time? A lot of that stuff is pretty hard to unpick, I guess. I guess the other point I was going to go to, Mark, was around the rookies. So last year, basically unprecedented from a rookie point of view. Most Victorian players especially weren't able to really show their wares, but not just that, also get better as footy players. Like, I wonder whether or not overall, the draft class is just going to be a little bit more underdeveloped. And will that cause us to potentially look a little bit more at these 300K type players? Or is that potentially too much of an overreaction? Because we will also have rookies that didn't actually get to play last year, even if they were showing a lot at training, because they might not have had any match simulation to go off. Wondering if you had any general thoughts about mid-price risk this year.
Probably need to see how that plays out over the next probably, 6 weeks or so till the season starts, realistically, because we need to see who is likely to be making the round one side. My feel at the moment would be that the rookie pool will be less this year, and probably the most difficult thing that we're likely to face is rookies just not playing consistent ongoing games. So I don't know how many people that are from the draft pool last year that are going to come in and play 20 plus games this year. I would suggest that the AFL clubs would protect them a little bit more because they haven't had that season and to really smash their bodies around and have that development. So that plays hell on our Supercoach team, but it's probably the right thing by those young men. I think that at this stage of the year, we always have that feeling though, like that there's not going to be enough rookies and we all need to pick mid prices. And then it turns up into the season and the rookies do turn up. So yeah, I'm hopeful that there'll be enough rookies out there, but gut feel at this stage says the draftees from last year will play less.
Interesting trend with draftee scoring last year. Also, it seems to be a little bit lower. Part of that could have definitely been because of the whole 16-minute thing. So the lower scorers just didn't get the same scaling. And so the differential between the high scores and the low scores was even more distinct. But I wonder whether or not some of that is also going to be impacted by the fact that the subs are continually decreasing. You know, at one stage, we had 3+1. Now we're back at 4, and we've got a heap less interchanges. Does that mean that players that get stuck on the bench a little bit more, maybe a bit more of those rookies? And last year, we did see a few instances of certain rookies also playing lower game time, you know, playing 50%, and then the better players playing more. That definitely could have been the result of the 16-minute thing, though. You know, the better players just stayed on park because they didn't have to play as long. So many different nuances to think about in terms of transitioning from last year to this. But overall, I guess my commentary is just more around the fact that potentially we might be a bit more tempted by these guys moving into 2021, depending on, you know, how the team starts shaking out. All right, next on to the premiums. And we're going to talk about Tom Stewart next. 11.9% of teams. I actually think that's a little bit low. He scored 18, I think, 2 weeks after I brought him in, or the week I brought him in last year. Smashed his collarbone in the innocuous incident with Tom McDonald. If you take that out, his average actually goes up to about 105 for the year. Burst onto the scene as a mature ager, then he's been All-Australian. He is a rebounder, but also takes intercept marks, super consistent, and basically comes with a little bit of a discount because of that 18 as well. He's one that's really high in my list, and obviously Geelong supporter, but, you know, I like finding value as well, Mark. And obviously that 18 is something that has got to tempt as well. So has he made your side at all, Mark? I mean, he's only 20K less than Rory Laird, I suppose, and you've got Zach Williams as well. So if you want Lloyd Williams Laird, I mean, it doesn't leave a lot of spots left.
It really doesn't. And Lloyd Williams Laird are sitting there at the moment for my team. So I think that depending on what happens with the rookies, I guess there might be one more premium spot in that side, or Lloyd or something might come out of that team at some stage. And Stewart was definitely in the first team that I picked this year. Just that level of consistency is awesome. Will the time on ground be affected this year? I think maybe not. My feel is that potentially he played higher minutes last year, but then he plays higher minutes again this year because he's a defender that can probably stay on the ground longer and the rotations might happen elsewhere in the field. How's the Geelong structure looking at the moment? I mean, they brought in a whole bunch of new players. The team is going to be different this year. Do you see Stewart's role within that team changing? I haven't really thought too much about that aspect.
I think stability in the back line is probably going to be the main consistent part for Geelong into 2021. Obviously, we lose Harry Taylor, but I think Blitzar slots back there and the rest of the team's fairly set. We already had depth in the back line, which saw Zach Tui move out into the wing last year. But Tom Stewart is the general. He's not going to lose his spot. He plays that third up intercepting role perfectly for Geelong and has a unique flair to be able to dart forward as well, a bit sort of Scarlet-like with the way that he runs and guns from the back line sometimes. So I don't see his role changing a heap.
Yeah.
Would you have him as your next picked after these three, Lloyd Williams Laird, or are there others in contention?
At that price, I probably would have him as next picked. It depends whether I want to move down a bracket, really. I mean, if Whitfield was fit, he would probably be ahead of Stewart. And I think Luke Ryan probably should be in that conversation as well.
So we've talked about six guys who have super high upside. Lloyd, Williams, Laird, Whitfield, Ryan, all guys that could do 105 plus. you know, that's what I meant before with weighing whether or not that changes the optics on picking some of these mid prices that are a bit more expensive in the back line this year. It's just not the same give, I think, because, you know, that doesn't even throw Howe in there yet. You know, some people are looking at Witherden if he can break out now that he's moved to West Coast. So there's, I think, very interesting times in the back line. We normally start here because it's scant. We start in the back line because we're like, all right, here's the two guns and here are the mid prices. This year, it's a very different dynamic. Let's go to Jeremy Howe and Luke Ryan next, seeing as we've already mentioned them. And they're the next two in terms of percentage pick anyway. 11.6% of teams is Jeremy Howe, 518,000, obviously coming off a long-term injury. And then Luke Ryan, 576,000. Now, he was a bit of a heartbreaker for some who started him, traded him out after a slow start, and then he went on absolute fire. Luke Ryan is a little bit, both of them, I guess, a bit more prone to the high score, but also a low score as well. I think the previous four, you could argue, have a little bit more consistency to them, either because they move up the ground a little bit more or because of the role that they play for the team allows them to just run and gun a little bit more. But Howe and Ryan have at times had to have defensive posts, which can tend to throw their score a little bit. Sicily's another type that falls into that bucket. I think that's probably reflective of the fact that their percentage ownerships are a little bit lower, despite still possessing that same high upside. Do you see that changing at all this year, Mark? And do you see either of those two creeping into your side, or would you prefer to stick to the four that we've already talked about?
I think that Luke Ryan definitely interests me quite a lot. If you look at his scores after round five last year, he only had one score below 100 and it was a 67. So sometimes he can have that lower game, but he's also got those huge games in him as well with a few like over 140 games in there. And Fremantle do get a couple of defenders back this year, which could free Ryan up a little bit from those defensive posts. I mean, the other side of that is that they do have some young players like Hayden Young that potentially will take some of the ball out of the back line away from Ryan, which might limit his scoring a little bit. Was his scoring inflated a little bit last year with those shorter games? And how much can you actually read into last year's scoring? I feel like you might get him cheaper in one game. He's not quite a Jake Lloyd, like free running defender. So Lloyd's probably safer to not have that one game, which drops his price. And Ryan does have the injury history as well, where he's never played more than 20 games. His trajectory in scoring is very good. I'm interested in Luke Ryan. He probably, at the price, just presents a little bit too much risk for my liking. I don't see him necessarily going above that 107 average. Howe doesn't interest me at all. Coming off injuries, he's had a pretty terrible injury history since crossing to Collingwood. And interesting, like his highest average ever was 94 previous to last year. And last year, whoa, 120. And we all look back and think, gee, he changed Supercoach and he was so, so impressive. But he only played four games. So still hasn't done it over an extended period. But what about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't jump on Howe last year. It definitely burnt me because by the time he got injured, his price point was high enough that the people who did get on him were laughing anyway. So that probably just more the context in terms of I had my doubts last year. I don't think it's going to hold into this year, especially returning from that long-term injury and with the price premium that you've got to pay for those banger games that he had before he went down. And Ryan, a guy to keep your eye out for to hopefully dip in price. He seems like a good candidate to leave on the sidelines as a potential upgrade option. He tends to present as a good upgrade throughout the year, really. All right, let's go to the next couple of players and we'll cover them together because they are cheapies. And one of them's crossover from Essendon, but not the same Danaher heartbreak, I'm sure. Horatio, 271,000 depth forward, surprisingly 9.5% of teams. Has changed roles.
Is that surprisingly high or surprisingly low?
High, I would have thought. I mean, hasn't really done Supercoach scoring well before. That sort of role is sketchy, small forward, medium forward, tall marking small. I mean, he's a weird type player. He relies on goals, really. No goals, no good, really. And those types of players you don't tend to want in your team. At 271,000, he's a step ladder, though. So I have liked picking 280k and below key position forwards before, just because if they spike a good game or two, it can really inflate their price beyond what you would get if somebody just dods out 75s and 80s or 85s at that sort of price point, which can also work, but can take a little bit longer to mature to the right level that you want to trade them out on. So Port Adelaide, you'd argue, in the position to contend again. They had a unfortunate prelim final loss, but you think with the age of that list that they should be coming back pretty strong. Ratio, you think, would be used to free up, you know, the Butters types up the field. So, you know, I think that his spot, you'd think, is there as long as he can play. I'm not so worried about job security. I think there's a role for a forward like him in their team. And it's been a couple of years that they tried to pull him over, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And it's good to see him back in Adelaide. It's very different to the Danaher situation. He's a player that, yeah, I'm rooting for. Like, good luck. His body just hasn't held up ever since he started, really. There was a period there where I would suggest he was Essendon's most important player, in the sense that if he was playing well, we would win. And if he wasn't playing well, then we would really struggle to win. And he could have that sort of role at Port Adelaide. There's a few more players at Port Adelaide, some better players in that forward line that could free him up a little bit. You've got Robbie Gray and Fantasia coming out of the same forward line. And I really hope it works out for him. It's more hope, though. I think that with a player like Fantasia, it's a bit like you suggested, that one score can make a real difference. But what you're really hoping for there is to gamble and get lucky. And sometimes that is absolutely part of this game, and we should be gambling to try and get lucky. 270 on a player that's had a big injury history is a pretty tricky situation, I would say, to be gambling to get lucky, especially since he doesn't have a premium scoring history and doesn't have a likelihood of a good premium scoring history. Like, it's not like he becomes a keeper. You're literally just hoping he has two or three big games early in a row and you can capitalize on his price increase and you don't have other priorities at that time in your team. So there's probably too many things that need to fall into place for that to work for me to be willing to take that risk.
Now, the next type of player is a guy that you're a little bit more likely to potentially try. You'd see him essentially just as an expensive premium rookie. Jordan Clark, 242K, only managed 3 games last year, but there's talk that he gets to potentially go on the wing a little bit. You know, you're talking about how could Tom Stewart potentially have his role slightly changed. Clark has spent a little bit of time in the back line last year. I suppose if he tries to cement a spot in there, that might change the dynamic up a little bit as a fast, small defender. We did probably struggle for that fast, small rebound, like a Jaden Short type that Richmond had. I think job security is the main concern here. If you saw him get games pretty continually, he's a fair talent, racks up the ball a little bit, good decision maker, decent foot skills. 240K is just such a easier price to stomach than even 270. 240 is just so close to the top end rookies that you're paying for, you know. So yeah, I think Clark's a guy that I may consider, but ultimately job security and that price point will probably scare me off. We've seen Charlie Constable types in the past. And the wing is an interesting thought, but I don't really know how he gets a wing spot when you get Isaac Smith and Higgins into your team. But I mean, they don't want to lose him to WA, and that's not a reason to pick him, but Geelong has shown faith in playing their kids before. Yeah, not too sure about him at this stage.
Is this year that season where they show faith in playing the kids, though? Like, it seems like it's the Cats, like, all the eggs are in this year's basket. This year and maybe next year if you're lucky. But, like, this is the shot that they're taking. And we haven't seen Geelong do that before. But you would think that that is going to make it probably tricky for Clark to get games. I'm a bit surprised he didn't go back to WA, given the fact that he really struggled to get into that side last year. Seems to have all the talent. If he was 180 and picked round one, you'd probably go for it. 240, it is better, but it's still a little bit tricky, given job security. Like, you could be 2 or 3 games in and he's not playing anymore, and then you're in a really tricky spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen Geelong do that, unfortunately. They'll drop a guy for a couple of weeks and then have him come in. They do a bit of a squad rotation model. Let's go to the next player, who's an interesting one. A guy who's moved clubs, 456K, being Alex Witherden. Has shown some really huge scoring potential in the past, and move of clubs has been a trigger in the past, but big scoring improvements. They do have players that do play his position well, though, already at West Coast.
My guess is that they've brought him in as an apprentice to Shannon Hearn and someone to take that mantle, with Hearn getting into his 30s now. He is the right age. The fact that he wasn't getting games at Brisbane last year is tricky. I mean, Brisbane had a really good side. I mean, he posted a 170 last year. He showed that he definitely has that ability because of his insanely good kicking. Fair bit of risk associated with him, with that uncertainty around the role and where he fits in. Definitely the sort of player you'd love to see 3 preseason games from and get a real, like, eye test on him, get a feel for really where he fits amongst that back six. and how many kickouts he's taking, stuff like that. So if he's taking the majority of kickouts, I think at 450, 460 is a great pick. But there's a lot of risk in starting him, but then he comes with a price discount because he could be a proper premium defender. If you're tossing up Witherden versus Stewart, do you always fall on Stewart in that battle?
Yeah, absolutely. Just because I think he's shown that he can do 105 previously. So you pay the 80K for that security, I think. Yeah, 80K is just not enough savings, I think, to be taking that level of risk, where I think Witherden's best season's been 83, like in terms of playing 20-plus. I mean, it did come in his second season. So it does have a lot of promise. Again, I just think the bar in the back line has gone up.
So what we're really talking about is risk profiles, right? Like how much risk are we willing to take on board in our team? And you do have to gamble in spots. You can't just go safe everywhere, but the value of each of those risks and the probability of it coming off.
Yeah, and that's why we like taking the risks more at that 300K, you know, price bracket if we're picking a mid-pricer, because there's more room to give because you can afford to trade them out and they've got a higher room to grow, where your premiums, you want to be a lot more certain that they're going to take that next step and even present some extra upside potential, which Witherden certainly does. You know, that 170 type score at this point. But let's talk about a couple more premiums, though, who really do present upside again. Caleb Daniel, Jordan Ridley, 7.8%, 7.1%, just the riches in the back line. Seriously, like we've been playing Supercoach a really long time. I don't know the last time we had this many guys who can average 100 plus to start the season. Caleb Daniel, picture of consistency, takes all the backline kickouts for Western Bulldogs. Like, I just don't see him getting worse. It's just not an exciting pick, I don't think. I don't know how much further high you can go. But if the Bulldogs start winning a lot of games and they are a top four side, then potentially that's enough to get him to a 105, 110 mark rather than a 100 to 105 mark. And he's still young. He's still got room to improve. And then you've got Jordan Ridley marking prowess last year being his first breakout. Again, room to improve. Also, long raking kicks also take some of the kickouts. I'd rather take, they're more expensive, of course, but there's just too many good options to be going the Witherden type. I'd be probably tempted by either of these two players, probably more so than Luke Ryan and Jeremy Howe even. I like the consistency of Daniel better, and I like the upside and even consistency of Ridley. I mean, he really surprised me last year.
I would take Ryan ahead of Ridley, definitely. Just a bit more AFL experience. Probably have a bit higher hopes for Freo this year. Ridley, awesome in that first year, and you would hope that he could keep going. He made such a massive jump in 1 year. Is he likely to make another big jump the year after? That seems like a lot of pressure to put on him. I'd be really happy with Ridley if he just consolidated this year and was able to produce similar performances. He did die off a little bit as the year went on, so just posted a few lower scores probably from mid-year onwards, where teams were probably trying to make him a little bit more accountable because the ball was just going through him constantly. Like Essendon was just using him all the time and his intercept marking was amazing. And I mean, there's some transitions going on in that Essendon team. You've got Hooker and Hurley's a bit injured at the moment, but what's the future of that backline look like? And we've got a couple of young fellas that might be part of what that looks like. And Ridley seems like the cornerstone of that for the future. So definitely high hopes for Ridley going forward. I don't love picking a player the year after they've had a breakout when they're breaking out to close to top average. Just in their fourth season, I think it's hard to really go another step, but hopefully he proves me wrong there. Daniel, like I said, boring pick, potentially. Seems super safe, super reliable, with a high floor. I guess his durability is a bit of a concern, though. He has never played 22. Seems to play most games every season, but does seem to miss a couple every year.
How about Luke McDonald, 6.8%? Yeah, riches. The riches. 513,000.
Now we're talking.
Oh my God. I'm going to be more confused after this show. This is not helping me, actually. Let me read his stats out since he moved into the back line and started taking all the kicking. And who would have thought he could kick this well? 122, 136, 95, 138, 119, 144, 94, 84, 121, 131. Lowest score of 84, one of only three scores under 100 on the finish, and each of his other scores were basically 120 plus. Fortunately for us, The first seven games, he was scoring in the 50s. Like, he had five scores under 59. And so, you know, you talk about a guy running into hot form to finish and hopefully carrying it into 2021. But just on that basis alone, he's got a 10. 512,000. Maybe I should be reconsidering my Tom Stewart pick.
He's definitely been in a few of my draft teams this preseason. Really loved the way he brought home the end of last season and everything I've heard of him over the preseason. It's just, I mean, looking at his scoring history is tricky because he's never really shown anything. And then second half of last year just goes bang and it all just clicks. Often,
maybe the beard.
Those players do go on with it.
COVID beard
does help. I'm not sure whether he has he still got the beard. Maybe that should be whether you're picking.
Don't know. We don't have any journos
got
left.
The beard when he lines up. Shout out to all the journos that are not in work at the moment. We love you guys. And miss you guys. I honestly think that he can actually go on with it. I really think that sort of structure in scoring in the past where a player, and I know that I'd said you don't want to pick a player the year after they break out. The difference with McDonald is that he broke out in half of the year, and so you're still getting a price discount on him. The difference between McDonald and Ridley. And the other difference is that he's 7 or 8 seasons in, so just has that body of work behind him where he's got that 100 or so games experience now, and whereas Ridley doesn't have that sort of exposure. So I think that McDonald is different to Ridley. Cheaper, actually went higher when he did go on a run, more experience, and a clear sort of a bit of a role change mid-year last year. So yeah, I'm actually pretty bullish on Luke McDonald, and yeah, him or Stewart are probably the two that I'm really lining up for that extra spot. I do think McDonald is a big gamble and it could not work out, but it could also work out incredibly well.
There is talk about Zeeble when we covered him in the forwards and the Patreon bonus yesterday, Mark. He talked about him moving into the back line. Now, I personally don't really see him doing the running and gunning. He's not known for his foot skills, but we did say the same about McDonald. I wonder whether or not they could try and use Zeeble with a big boot out, like just get an absolute torpedo out of there. He's got a big, long boot. If he moves to halfback, how does he interact with McDonald? That could be a consideration just to keep your eye out on in the first preseason game.
That comment, Marcus, I've just gotten all excited about Luke McDonald, locked him into my lineup, and then you give me that crap about some information that might not go with the initial information. I guess my initial thoughts are North may have so many points kicked against them this year that there's plenty of kickouts for both of them.
Look, I think I'd have him above Ridley, Daniel, Witherden, Ryan, Howe. Wow. The next guy I've actually been pretty tempted by, but I'm just worried about what the introductions at Carlton are going to do to him. But Sam Doherty, this is a guy who's averaged 115 as the preeminent halfback to years in a row. Last year, excusable that he didn't quite reach that height. This year, under 500K, I mean, he's on under 7% of teams picked at the moment. So the world's moved past him a little bit. Adam Saad comes in. Has the game changed a little bit so that Doherty's style doesn't quite hold up with the same point scoring as it did prior to his injuries? Where do you sit on Doherty? I mean, he's the biggest enigma for me just because we like to look at history as an indicator of, you know, potential value, and arguably he's the most obvious one on that metric.
How many positions in defense do we have this year? Is it still just 6? Because that could be a bit tricky based on this show trying to fit all these guys in. I think there's a few factors. So number one, a lot of players struggle in the first year back from ACLs to post scores that they've posted previously, and then in the second year they actually can return to form for previous years. We've seen that a number of times in the past. Will Doherty fit that category? Not sure. He's coming off 2 ACLs, so potentially that is more significant, and he may struggle to fully return to ever be the player that he was beforehand. So that probably puts a little bit more doubt on that. I think potentially the biggest factor for me is coaching. So coaches have changed during the time where he was a gun to where it is now. And if you think about Doherty and the way he played and the way Carlton played when he was scoring, he was playing that Jake Lloyd role where it was just always free, always at the back of packs, and in defense, Carlton would always hand pass him the ball. Like every single time they would look for him and give him the ball to get them out of defense. Is Carlton still going to play that style? So Lloyd's benefiting from the fact that he's had the same coach throughout that period and it's the same style, so he's able to show consistency in that role. Doherty, I think, relies on just receiving that ball over and over and over again because he's such a great kick. So I would have my doubts that he's going to be able to get that role back again, which may affect his full ceiling. So the injury And the rolled outs potentially mean that that's why he's priced at under 500,000, right? Like, that's why he's a bit of a gamble. If he comes out and averages 120 over the course of the season, I'm probably not going to be surprised by that either, because he was an absolute superstar of the competition. I'm really unsure on him, so he probably won't make my starting team. I think you did make a pretty good case for.
All right, those are all the guys that are in above 5% of teams at the moment. We'll leave the rest for our bonus show where, you know, Mills, Cumming, Maynard. Do you remember a little guy called Nick Haynes from last year? He averaged 98. I mean, he tailed off for the last two games, but. Yeah, so there's still some juicy stuff to talk about in the background, but we'll leave it there for the main show because we've gone for a little while. Do you want to summarize your thoughts as we went through that experience? I'm more confused.
Jeez, some of those options you mentioned for the Patreon show are pretty decent as well. So, look, I think that after having this chat, I'm looking at more than likely there'll be four premium defenders chosen in my side, and that's because there's a lot of scoring in defense, and Laird and Williams are absolutely locked in, as we discussed on our first show. And then the Lloyd, McDonald, Stewart, and anyone else that we talked about as well, fighting for those other two spots.
My main takeaways is that I'll likely be tempted by value away from Lloyd. I'm very much more unlikely to pick a Millerer type in the face of sort of such outstanding premium opposition. And that's maybe a centering point to remind ourselves on is injury history and reliability as a way to navigate through sort of the multitude of options that we have. It can be often forgotten, but it's an important part of making sure your total scores are right up there. All right, Mark, and with that, we'll wrap up the backline show, and we'll, of course, do a little regroup at the end to summarize our thoughts post the preseason game. So we may revisit this. It's still, you know, more than 4 weeks out when we're addressing these backline guys. Don't forget, patreon.com / supercoachcoach if you want to get more content. We'll catch you all next time. See ya. Don't want this, get crazy. Don't want this, get crazy. Don't want this, get crazy.